Senator from the 15th, do you yield to an inquiry from your colleague of the 23rd district?
I do.
Yeah, I know.
He does proceed.
Thank you, Mr. President. Senator, we're talking about personal property taxes and the bill that we voted out of your committee having to do with personal property taxes, and I'm going to ask for a roll call vote, so I just wanted to make sure you were here for that. So thank you. Thank you for the
inquiry. I look forward to voting for that.
Okay, well, thank you. That's very motivational. Thank you, Senator. Mr. President.
Senator from the 23rd.
If I could have four additional members standing, I would ask for a roll call vote on this amendment.
You have the requisite numbers of members standing, Senator. You will have a roll call vote on this amendment.
Mr. President, Mike, do you want to talk about it? Mr. President, may I inquire of the Senator from the 8th?
Senator from the 8th, do you yield to an inquiry?
I do.
He does. Proceed.
Senator, you have to forgive me. I'm still having some technical difficulties with my microphone, so I'm going to make the best of it.
I have found my voice doesn't carry very well in here. I hook it to the knot of my tie, and it picks up very well.
I think they're going to have to do some repair work.
What you should do is string yours out to you. You must twist a lot.
I think somebody might be trying to sabotage my microphone so that I can't speak on the floor. Maybe that's what's going on here. I don't know. Senator, you... Yeah, I think you had some questions. I know this is my inquiry, but I want to make sure I'm addressing exactly how this works.
Well, you said some interesting things that I agree with, basically. I know I talk a lot of constituents, and personal property tax is something high on their list that they are bothered by. Every year it comes at Christmas time, every year. I've got a 2017 and a 2015, and I'm amazed every year how much more money I have to pay on property I already own. I would love to do something. What bothers me, though, is the schools and local taxing jurisdictions, libraries, and different things rely on this revenue so much that's what slows me down from doing something. Right. In fact, I've got a truck downstairs right now. It's a 2001 Toyota. I brought it down because I brought my bike this week, and I still pay property tax on it. I'll have it 20 years next May, and that seems just a bit strange to be paying money on something I've owned that long. And I'm interested to hear how you would remedy this funding issue with schools and stuff if we ever do something about personal property.
Absolutely. So as you know, and forgive me, as I'm going to take a little time to kind of go through this, but I think that there is some interest in this particular answer, because as you mentioned, the number one concern that I get on something like this is how would we replace the money? And so as a backdrop of discussion, in the course of this bill making its way through the process, we were able to determine that roughly in local areas, there is no state revenue that comes from property taxes or personal property taxes. So the first thing I would say up front is this isn't going to affect our state budget. But approximately of our local revenues, which are going to, as you mentioned, some of our sensitive constituencies, whether it's schools, fire districts, approximately 15% of those local revenues are coming from personal property taxes. The remaining 85% is either coming from sales taxes, but in most cases it's coming from regular property taxes. So the first distinction I would make on this particular amendment, Senator, is that we are not addressing real estate taxes, so the tax that you pay on your house. We are addressing the personal property tax that you pay on your vehicles, on your campers, on your trailers,
motorcycles,
and apparently airplanes,
motorcycles, but
not your home. So this is not going to affect regular real estate property tax. So as I mentioned, 15% of those revenues. Now, I need to go into a discussion of how those local entities make their annual budgets every year. And there's basically, as you're well aware, and as you've seen probably for years, each year we get an assessment on the regular property that we own and the personal property that we own. And those assessments which are determined by the county assessors in each area, are then multiplied by the actual tax levies on those items after they're multiplied against their assessment value. They're then multiplied by the tax levy for real estate and for personal property in those areas. Now, real estate, those levies operate within a range of values. So unlike income tax, which is 5.4% or 6%, or it's an exact number, local taxes operate in a range, a levy. And depending on what the assessed valuations come up with, the levies could fluctuate within that range that's approved by the voters. So at any given time, your local area may not be at the high end of their levy, so they could actually increase your actual levy to overcome any shortfalls that they may experience, because maybe we're in an environment like 2008 when real estate properties were going down. Well, the levies can go up to a certain limit to offset that.
Just like they can lower to avoid Hancock if revenues are up, right?
So that's a great point. We've been in an environment, of course, where real estate properties and personal property, for that matter, have been going up in recent years. So real estate, as that real estate goes up, the Hancock Amendment in our Constitution prevents revenues, not assessments, revenues from going up more than an increase, more than the increase in inflation. So what happens in order to prevent the revenues from going up, as assessments go up and up, the levy has to go down, right? So we are primarily in an environment where our levies have gone down, which gives more flexibility for them to ever go up in case revenues are lost at some point in the future. Now, I got to admit, when I first was learning about this process, I didn't actually believe that my levies were actually going to go down, just I guess because I'm cynical about government. So I actually went and looked at my own property tax bill for the past few years. Sure enough, as the value was going up in order to continue to comply with Hancock, the levies were coming down.
Usually bumped right up to that number that Hancock, as a district, because the entire entity is how Hancock's.
Yes, you're always, I'm confident that you're seeing the inflationary increase going up, but it's still forcing those levies down. So what happens in the scenario where we move away from personal property tax? Let's say that let's say we got rid of all personal property tax. So that would be 15% of the revenues. What would happen is that in order to compensate for whatever loss we approve, the levies would go up on our regular real estate in order to
offset that.
So the first conversation that local areas need to understand is that it's very unlikely that they're going to see a loss in revenue because levies have been going down statewide. Now, one of the things that we can do to mitigate those assessments, the real estate property taxes, the regular property taxes going up, is either one, we can pare down exactly what we're doing in the personal property tax and expand it, the reduction over a period of years. If we wanted to get rid of that entire 15% that comes from personal property tax, you could expand it over, I'm just making up a number, Senator, 10 years. Right. So you take a little piece at a time and move the state away from it. And then the natural increases that are allowed by inflation would actually just be the slow pieces that are chopping up the little pieces of personal property tax that you lost. So ultimately, the local areas don't see effectively a net loss in actual revenue because you've spread it out. Well, what I've done with this amendment is I've only taken a piece of personal property tax. So I've tried to address a portion of personal property tax which I've identified as personal property over 5 years of age. Now, there's a lot of different ways you could do that. You could exempt, or you could make the assessment rate 1% on the first $20,000 of personal property assessment if you wanted to try to address lower income homes. There's a number of ways you could do that. But what I'm trying to do with this amendment is find a common ground between my SJR, which is all personal property tax, and the senator from the 7th Amendment, which was personal property tax over 10 years, and trying to find that middle ground where I'm addressing personal property tax over 5 years, so that's just a piece of it. It'll generally, that's obviously going to affect older vehicles with a lower value, so I think that we're on the low side of trying to eliminate that.
It would be much smaller, you're right.
Yes. So that's the gist of how local areas should feel like this is an attack on their revenue, because the way we collect the way we collect local taxes is designed to deal with this. And actually, for the past few years, they've been in a better and better position as their levies have come down, as property taxes have gone up. Property assessments have gone up.
Right. That's interesting. I would another side of this equation, as you say, with the real property, with real estate, is I also hear from a lot of constituents, because, as you know, in your area and my area, the assessments this year, I have a lot of constituents that are absolutely on fire about their assessments on their real property as well. In fact, there's been a bill. I know the senator from Platt, has been working. I've been working with him. I hope it makes it this year. With all the chaos, I'm not sure as far as the assessments, the processes they go through, the Board of Equalization. There is just a massive amount of problems in Jackson County, in my area, on this. So that's another thing that makes all this very complicated and very, very
insensitive.
But it is. And like you said, though, over a 10-year phase-in period, I like that. It's something they can plan for, they can budget for, and absolutely accommodate. So it's something I don't know how successful we'll be this year. It's kind of late. I'm of the opinion we have to be careful because of the short time, and a lot of advocates aren't here and able to be heard. But I think it's a conversation we should have next year for sure and look at. So I appreciate this very much.
This is a good place to start, and so we'll. I appreciate the inquiry, Senator.
Thank you,
Senator.
Thank you, Mr. President.
Thank you, Mr. President.
Senator from the 23rd. Does any of the senators desire to be heard on the adoption of Senate Amendment 7, Senator from Butler County? For what reason do you rise?
I'd like to inquire the Senator from 23rd.
Senator from the 23rd, do you yield to an inquiry of the Senator from Butler County?
I do, Mr. President.
You may proceed.
Senator, good afternoon.
I am your Vice Chairman of General Law, is that correct?
You are my Vice, of course. And you're a darn fine Vice Chairman, Senator.
You know of any meeting or of any committee meetings I've missed in your committee?
I think your attendance record is at least as good as mine, Senator.
Well, I noticed a while ago you were saying that you didn't know anything about this bill on the aircraft.
Uh-huh.
Let me tell you the reason why. You weren't at the Transportation Committee meeting last week.
I missed that meeting?
You missed it. It was right here.
I could have asked all these questions, Senator.
I'm sitting there letting you ask all those things, and I'm thinking, should I go over and just like maybe hand you a note?
And I ask a lot of questions in your hearings.
I know.
So, and I missed my chance.
And you've been 100% until then also. So
that was the wrong one to miss.
What a bad move.
And we need a remonstrance in the journal, Senator. I don't know.
And we were setting history too because we met right in here, the Transportation Committee.
Oh, this was recent. Yes, that was
right.
A historic meeting. I think there was a lot of legislation, maybe on this bill that was discussed. That
I just wanted to make sure.
My regret is increasing.
But I just wanted to make sure that you knew that you had the opportunity to learn more about that.
I understand. I appreciate that, Senator.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. President.
Does any other senator desire to be heard on the adoption of Senate Amendment 7? Senator from the 24th, for what reason do you rise?
Thank you, Mr. President. To inquire the senator from the 23rd.
Senator from the 23rd. Do you yield to an inquiry of the senator from the 24th?
I do, Mr. President.
You may proceed.
Good afternoon, Senator.
Good afternoon.
It's already afternoon.
It is already afternoon. We speak again. Senator, question for you about your amendment.
Okay.
You know what? I didn't hear if you said earlier what the fiscal note on this is going to be.
So the fiscal note is let me take a step back because there were two bills that came out of committee. There was a bill that would eliminate all personal property tax, and there was a bill that would eliminate just personal property tax over 10 years. Now the fiscal note is for all personal property tax is pretty big. Because in the manner that they calculate it, they don't take into account for their measurements everything that I just described from the senator from the 8th. They treat it as a straight off-the-top deduction of 15%. The devil, of course, is in the details because that's not how it actually would play out. The way it would actually play out is this gap that would be created by the elimination of any of the personal property tax would be factored into the levies on regular personal property tax. So there is a fiscal note which kind of identifies just how much revenue overall is coming from personal property, how much that 15% represents, and it's a pretty big number. It's off the top of my head, I want to say it was $800 or $900 million, something like that. So it's a big number. My understanding, as I've described to the senator from the 8th, is that that would then be offset into the levies for regular property tax. So this leads into a conversation about either one, you can take that big number, all the personal property tax, and maybe phase out the personal property tax over a series of years to just reduce the number in any given year, or we can do, we can do what I've described in this amendment, which is just try to take up front a smaller piece of the over personal property tax pie.
But we don't know then what your amendment will cost.
I think the actual net cost is zero, because that will actually be translated to regular property tax bills, regular property tax levies. So this is an attempt to move the state away from personal property tax. So if let me go back to what I was saying.
You're trying to move it from that kind of a tax to a different kind of a tax.
So here's...
Great.
If you want, I could go back through that again. I don't know if that would be...
No, that's all right.
Okay.
That's all right.
Everybody just collectively sighed when you said, no, that's all right, Senator.
Yeah, right. Understood. And the way I read this, just want to make sure, have you... So it doesn't matter to me. So we keep our vehicles a long time anyway. What this will do is encourage people to hold on to their vehicles longer, perhaps. Save a little money on their personal property tax.
That could be an outcome, yes, Senator. That's correct.
Yeah. Okay.
I mean, that would be a decision that each individual household would have to make.
Well, this would incentivize that decision.
I don't know if... I see where you're going. I think it would ease the... I would probably term it a different way, but I see where you're going. I think effectively that's the same effect, yes.
Thank you for the inquiry. I appreciate it. Mr. President? Either Mr. President? Mr. President, A or B? Okay, now you're going to fight over
it. Senator from the 24th.
Thank you, Mr. President. I have an amendment. It has been distributed. I move for a waiver of the reading, and I move for its adoption. An amendment to the amendment. An amendment to the amendment. Did I say that?
Thank you for clarifying that, Senator. Please send your amendment to the amendment forward.
I have.
Did you seek a waiver of the reading? I'm sorry.
I did.
Hearing no objection, a waiver of the reading shall be granted. Senator, please feel free, I'm sorry if I missed it, to move for the adoption and then explain it.
I move for the adoption of the amendment, and the amendment, what it does is what we talked about before, brings the legislation that is currently proposed as a change in the underlying bill, adds that change I had earlier onto this amendment so that owners of airplanes still don't begin to, don't need to get 200 hours on their planes before their property tax goes into effect. So it takes it back to current law, which says after 50 hours. And with that, I'm happy to take any questions. I move for its adoption, renew my motion, and take any questions. Thank you.
Senator from the 24th has moved the adoption to Senate Amendment Number 1 to Senate Amendment Number 7 for the Senate substitute for Senate Committee substitute for House Bill 1963. Does any senator desire to be heard on that motion? Senator from Callaway County.
Mr. President, to inquire of the senator from the 24th, please.
Senator from the 24th, do you yield?
Yes, I do.
She does. Proceed.
Now, will you go back over this? I was talking. Tell me what your amendment does.
Yeah, so I had this amendment as an amendment, not an amendment to the amendment, a little bit earlier, and I withdrew it. What it does is right now in current law, it says that if someone who owns a small airplane uses it for 50 hours, then they begin to pay personal property tax. The change in the underlying bill moved that to 200 hours. So the cost to the state would be about somewhere between, well, maybe close to $90,000 is what I got from an old fiscal note from 2016 when the move was to 250 miles. So what we're saying is people who own planes need to pay their property taxes after they've used the plane for 50 hours, not the change in the legislation, which takes it to 200 hours. So gives them much more time to fly before they are responsible for paying taxes on the planes they own.
Do you have your own plane?
No.
So I guess I'm trying to find out why this is, how you got it.
Because it's in the underlying bill.
Pardon me?
It's in the underlying bill, and I saw it as a tax break for wealthy people who own their planes, and I didn't think that was appropriate in this environment.
Okay. All right. Thank you, Senator. Mr. President?
Senator from Callaway?
May I inquire of the senator from the 23rd, please?
Senator from the 23rd District, you yield to an inquiry.
I do, Mr. President.
He does. Proceed.
Thank you, Mr. President.
Good afternoon, Senator.
Thank you, Senator. So, when I'm looking at your amendment, so you're saying any car that's in excess of 5 years old, so that includes all the historics, only have a 1% tax on these vehicles?
So it'll be, so this is actually for anything that gets personal property. So it could be vehicles, it could be trailers, it could be boats, it could be airplanes, theoretically. So what it does, it doesn't change directly the levy of tax, it changed the assessment value. So when your home, and maybe this is a bad example because homes aren't included, but each year your vehicles and your home are assessed by the county assessor. And they're assessed at a certain percentage of market value, correct? So in the state of Missouri, the assessment rate for personal property, which is your vehicles and your boats and your trailers, is very high relative to other states. It's 33% of market value. Well, at 33% market value, once you multiply that by the actual levy rate, that puts Missouri as number three in terms of the highest personal property tax rates anywhere in the country. And as a side note, only 21 out of the 50 states even have personal property tax. So most states don't. So what my amendment does is it says for personal property, so for vehicles and trailers and boats that are more than 5 years old, we will change the assessment rate from 33% to 1%. Which will, it won't completely get rid of personal property tax on those vehicles because you still have a 1% assessment rate, but it'll get rid of 99% of tax on personal property over 5 years of age.
So, thank you. I appreciate the explanation. So, individuals in the state will probably like this, those that have airplanes and boats and...
And actually, you know what, Senator, I need to make a correction change. I said that wrong. This is, currently, the amendment only addresses vehicles, so it won't affect, I misspoke. It does not affect airplanes. It does not affect boats, trailers. It's only vehicles.
So we're just back to vehicles again.
Yes.
Okay. So, but I'm trying to decide how to vote on this because it affects then the county's budget that they are used to. And so then, you know... They hate it when we mess with their budget and the money that they depend on to take care of their area. And so do we know what this will do to our counties?
No, I think it won't have a net effect. And here's why I say that. and for the benefit of the body, the concern about impossible impact to county and city budgets is by far the number one concern, right? Because as I mentioned earlier, personal property tax as a whole represents roughly about 15% of local city and county revenue. So the concern is, well, if you take away this 15% tax or a portion of it, what's going to happen to the gap? If personal property and property tax were levied in a manner like income taxes, which is a straight scale, right? You have X amount of income and here's the rate. So if you lower the rate, the revenues go down. Personal property taxes and property taxes have an extra variable. They have two variables in particular. One, they have the assessment of the item under consideration. And two, they have the actual levy that's approved by the voters that can be applied against that. In any given year, an assessor from the county will determine all the assessed values and then will set the levy equal to an amount that meets the budgetary obligations of the county. So if ever we got rid of personal property tax, as an example, or theoretically, if we got rid of regular real estate tax, the levies, because your overall assessed value for all of the equipment and revenue went down, right? Because you took a bunch of stuff out. The levies would go up on everything else to compensate. Now, we're in an environment right now, because we're not affecting real estate taxes, we're not touching that because That's 85% of those revenues. If you take away a portion of personal property taxes, the levies on real estate, regular real estate, which have been coming down in recent years because assessments have been going up. In fact, the Hancock Amendment prohibits increases in overall county and city revenues from increasing beyond inflation. So in order, because we've heard on this floor stories of assessments that have gone up 50, 60%, well, when that happens countywide, the levies have to come down to order to make sure that overall revenues don't violate the Hancock Amendment. So, and I didn't believe this until I actually looked at my own real estate tax bill for my county. Sure enough, because my assessment is going up, my rates, my levies are actually coming down. Now, all levies operate within a range of what the voters approve. So as those levies come down because property taxes have gone, property values have gone up, it actually puts counties and cities in a better position to deal with the loss of a certain portion of revenue, which may be because the legislature says you can no longer collect personal property tax on some vehicles. In this case, vehicles over five years old, and we're going to, because we're reducing the assessment rate. So for the practical effect of eliminating all or a portion of personal property may be that some of that is translated to regular property taxes. But if so, that just puts Missouri in line with most every other state in the United States, because personal property taxes are incredibly regressive, unlike so much real estate taxes, which means that personal property taxes and the rate at which we're collecting personal property taxes are, I believe, in a very outsized way, hammering our low-income and middle-income households, unlike what regular real estate property taxes are doing.
Hey, Senator, I appreciate the information. Did this go through a committee at all, so
it
that
did.
The counties, and what was the result of the committee?
Two bills came through the Ways and Means Committee. Both of those bills were voted out of the Ways and Means Committee, and they both had a public hearing. Now, to talk about what those two bills were, they were slightly different than my amendment, and I want to describe what that means. One of the amendments...
Don't you say this was going to negatively affect their budget?
They did say that, but I think that they said that because they don't understand how, they don't have a good grasp of what the long-term impact would be. And quite frankly, I had to have a long conversation with my own assessor in my county so that I could understand better. So what the two bills did...
Let me ask you one other thing here. So why do we need a roll call vote on this?
Because moving away from personal property taxes is something that I identified at the beginning of the session, which was one of my biggest priorities as it relates to local taxes. It consistently was identified by my constituents as something they wanted me to address. In fact, there's actually a...
I don't get complaints about the state taxes. I get complaints about the federal, but not that they don't complain to each other, but that's not something that's been overpowering in my district. So I don't want to filibuster the bill. But I feel like you've put a bunch of us in a catch-22 with the roll call vote on this. I wish you wouldn't do that, since it is from the devil to the deep blue sea. Do we take care of our constituents? Do we take care of the counties? Who is going to be affected the most? And so,
well, I appreciate that. I think in this case the roll call vote is the best way to identify to the public where the body stands. I mean, if we did a voice vote, there's not a lot of feedback we can get to that. By having the roll call vote, we're going to know where the body stands, and then we're going to allow individuals to have some further input, because I'm getting a lot of feedback from my constituents and from folks around the state because I'm the one carrying the bill.
Right.
But I think that once we have an understanding of where the body's at, I think that it would facilitate much better feedback from the people.
And there's so much on this bill. This, you know, is this one more thing that's going to cause it to not move through the process? I don't know. But at any rate, thank you for your time, Mr. President.
Thank you, Senator.
Thank you.
Senator from Butler.
Can I call the Senator for the 23rd again?
Senator from the 23rd, do you yield?
I do, Mr. President.
He does. Proceed.
I just like to see you jumping up and down over there.
I'm getting a good workout, Senator. I'm getting a good workout.
Hey, you know, Missouri is still a great place.
Yes.
You remember the income tax fallacy debate that we had here? Do you remember that?
I don't know if I agreed with that.
But I had the facts, if you may remember, because you were asking people, is that factual?
I understand and recognize there is a different perspective on income tax.
Yeah, and there's a certain amount of money that a government's got to have to operate on.
That's right.
There's no free lunches. We used to use, I used to hear several senators in there talk about how great Tennessee was, and I dispelled that really well. And I can go up, and I'm not going to filibuster my own bill, but I'll wait for somebody else. But I think it's time for you and I to go back through my tax fallacy stuff. Because we were talking.
I've never had the opportunity to do this.
I can't.
With
we're not doing it on the bill I'm handling. We're going to do it some other time again. But my point being is, if we're just zoned in on what you're talking about there, which, you know, I'm a low tax guy too. But let's not be using examples of Florida and Texas and Nevada and Tennessee just because they didn't have an income tax, but they do, and I proved that. But everything else they do is way more than Missouri, a lot more. So I just like to make sure for those who's listening, Missouri is still a great place to live. We might need to make some improvements here and there. But my main thing has always been, are we spending our money wisely? That's what we need to be doing. So anyway, that's all I've got right now. But that's a big, deep folder I got up there, and we can go back through it again.
Red folder?
No, actually, I think it was just orange.
I thought it was the red folder.
Well, the red folders.
You and the former senator from the third had the red folder, and whenever the red folder would come out, it was bad news.
It was a bad day when red folders come out. But I think it was just a vanilla-looking folder. But again, the point being is every state has got to have a certain amount of revenue to operate on. The key is, how do we spend our money, and are we spending our money wisely? That's where it's at. So with that, thank you, Mr. President.
Thank you, Senator.
We are on the adoption of Senate Amendment Number 1, Senate Amendment Number 7 for the Senate substitute. Does any senator desire to be heard on that motion? Senator from Webster County was on his feet. Senator from Webster.
Third.
Senator from the 23rd, you yield to an inquiry. He does. Proceed.
Good afternoon, Senator.
Good afternoon. We're back again. Need some information. Need an education here. The biggest recipient of personal property tax, which I don't like, it's got to come from somewhere. I agree with the senator from Poplar Bluff. But where does it go to?
So personal property taxes are collected and remitted to the counties and cities of those jurisdictions. So there's
right.
there's no state component to this. It's all at the local level.
Right. It is at a local level, but who's the biggest recipient of those taxes once it gets to the local level?
I believe a majority, the biggest recipient are probably school districts.
Is probably what? I'm sorry.
School districts?
Yeah. Back whenever there was something out here about what it was going to cost, or, you know, do away with all personal property tax, which sounds great, and the average voter, it sounds really good. So I called my local school, and I asked them, and also the tax assessor, too, or the county office holder, what's it going to cost the school in Marshfield, Missouri, if we do away with all personal property tax? And it's been, three or four months ago since this. It's $7 million if we did away with all of it. And one of the biggest parts of it would be vehicle tax, and that would that be correct? Because they're not going to, you know, this is personal property, not real estate.
Yes, that's correct. Yeah. Most of it comes
and
from
I pay
vehicles.
A ton of it because I've got a farm, I've got tractors, I've got implements, I've got livestock, I've got way too many vehicles, like six vehicles for two drivers, with a farm truck and some collector cars. This, that, and other. So it's not a tax I personally like, but I'm guessing probably school tax is probably 75 or 80%, they get 75 for 80% schools do of personal property?
It obviously, it's going to vary by county. But again, to the point I made earlier, for when you eliminate a portion of the overall real estate, personal property and personal property tax base, when you eliminate a portion of that, the levies for all the remaining items that can be taxed, which is primarily your real estate, will adjust in order to ensure that the counties and cities can make their budgets. So again, the most common concern I hear is that this is going to lead to a loss in revenue at the county and city level. But in the manner that cities and counties operate, they're going to either A, that will naturally be taken care of by the fluctuations in their levies that they have already passed and gotten approved by the voters, or B, if in the rare case, and we were never actually able to identify a case to where the levy ceilings would be breached in order to make everything whole, in that case, that the mechanisms to ask the voters for additional resources are unchanged. So I think that this is an opportunity for us to move away from personal property tax. And really, the idea that this is going to cause dramatic gaps in local funding, I think, is not really based in reality. That's more of a fear mechanism for the change to move away from personal property tax. And quite frankly, most states in the union don't have personal property tax.
But they have other expenses. I mean, somebody's got to come. Just like if we eliminated all of it and Marshfield School lost $7 million, it'd be pretty tough. And I'd hate to think, have you checked to see what your schools would lose on this? And
they wouldn't lose anything.
If they have a levy.
They wouldn't lose anything. That's
if it's a levy voted by the people, does that levy drop then?
No, the levy would actually fluctuate between the realm that's been approved by the voters to compensate. Now, I also, as a Republican senator, as you know, I'm a big believer that cutting taxes leads to growth. I'm a big believer, you know, the average middle and lower income class household that owns two vehicles is going to pay an average of $800 to $1,000 every December 1st. Yeah. That's what causes such a pushback from the populace on this particular tax. If every one of those households had $800 to $1,000 more, maybe we wouldn't need to send federal stimulus checks from D.C. So that kind of extra economic capacity from a vast majority of our Missouri households, I think, is a phenomenal thing. I promised I'd come down here to try to cut people's taxes, and that's what we'd be doing.
But if sales revenue tax goes up in your county, do the schools get any of that?
Well, this doesn't have anything to do with sales tax.
I know, but you're saying if sales increase and et cetera like that, we continue to prosper.
It depends by counties, but all of the local sales taxes, they do go to counties, they do go to school districts, they go to pay bonds for school districts, they go to pay a number of local priorities, they go to pay for fire departments, they pay for a number of things. So yes, absolutely.
Does your school get some sales tax?
Does my school, then, where I live?
Yes.
That would be Francis Howell School District. I'd have to check to see if they have a sales tax.
Do you know of any school district that has a sales tax, a dedicated sales tax for a school?
I'd have to. I could speculate, but I'd have to get a list. What I do know is that those school districts would retain their revenue streams from real estate taxes, and the levies they have would compensate to offset any losses they have for personal property tax. So I think your point, Senator, is that, one, are we going to see massive reductions in gaps in revenue at the local level? I have consistently said my answer to that is no, because of how the assessment and levy process works at the local level. And the second question is, if other items increase as a result, whether it's purchases, and those purchases, quite honestly, those purchases could include new real estate. In fact, if you have an extra $800 to $1,000 a year, that could facilitate more real estate tax real estate purchases that would directly go back into those funds.
Well, that might be true, but somebody's already paying real estate tax on that. So unless it increases value, there's no more income from real estate tax.
Well, in an area, my area, we're building a lot of new houses.
Yeah, if you built a new house, Senator, they would benefit from that.
That's correct.
But I wouldn't ask every senator. I think they ought to check with their local school boards or local superintendent and just see what this would cost them. And I think we ought to have a way, some way, to make that up. Believe me, I hate taxes. I really hate personal property taxes. But most of the places I've seen, they have to compensate it somewhere, getting it from somebody. So appreciate the inquiry. Thank you, Senator.
The senator from Butler County.
For those of you, inquire the senator for 23rd.
Senator from the 23rd, do you yield?
I do, Mr. President.
He does. Proceed.
Okay. I keep it busy over here, Senator. This
I'm
is
not going to filibuster anymore. What's the 1%? on your amendment?
So the 1% is what we'd be changing the assessment rate to for vehicles over 5 years. So right
I thought
now,
you were, I thought earlier you said something about 10% or something.
I did say 10%.
So you changed to 1?
I've got to change to 1.
All right, so you're down to 1%.
I'm down 1%.
1%. All right, thanks, Senator.
Thank you, Senator.
Further discussion, Senator from the 4th.
Can I inquire of the Senator from the 23rd, please?
Senator from the 23rd, do you yield?
I do, Mr. President.
He does. Proceed.
Senator.
If we could get a little quiet in the chamber so the senators could hear each other in debate. Senators, please proceed.
Senator, I'm having a little trouble with this microphone. How are you today?
I'm good, Senator. How are you?
I'm good. I remember we had this long conversation about these personal property tax, remember? So right now, help me understand your amendment right now. You're saying that vehicles over
5 years of age.
5 years of age.
The assessor, so right now, all personal property tax is assessed at a certain percentage of their market value as determined by the county assessor. So right now, it's assessed at 33%. What my amendment does is it says that for vehicles over the age of 5 years, instead of being assessed at 33%, it will be assessed at 1%. So it gets rid of essentially 97% of personal property tax on vehicles over the age of 5 years.
Now, you will be happy to, this will probably shock everybody because, my constituents in my district want to eliminate personal property tax altogether. Now, when I talk to my counties and my municipalities, they say, this is what personal property tax pay for. So when I looked at the list of things that they sent me, basically what personal property tax is paying for, nobody is having the discussion that those same things that the personal property tax is paying for, their state tax is paying for them, city tax is paying for them. So it's like when I'm looking at personal property tax and what it pays for, we're paying for it. We're paying for the same thing. School districts, we voted a tax for the school districts in one area of my district, and then they're still collecting some money for the school through the personal property tax. So it's like I'm paying three different taxes for the same thing. So nobody is saying that. When you look at what all the personal property tax is paying for in your history and what you were doing, what did you come up with? Did you notice that or...
I did. And so, as I mentioned earlier, about 15% of local revenues are personal property tax. The other 85% are coming from primarily regular real estate taxes. So the when you talk to everyday constituents, at least in my district, the concern is, why are we paying such a high tax on vehicles when, A, most states don't have a personal property tax, B, when I've already paid sales tax on this purchase and now I'm being asked to pay a tax year after year after year, and three, the rate of the tax is so high that every December 1st I'm getting a bill from my local government for $1,000 or more. What you'll hear and what you've probably heard from counties and cities is that, well, wait a minute, if you get rid of that 15% revenue, how are we going to pay for all this stuff? And so there's the disconnect. Because
yes.
if we were, my answer to that question is, they're not going to lose any revenue. And here's why. If this were a tax like income taxes,
mm-hmm.
income tax is a straight scale. The scale is 5.4%, or
mm-hmm.
it changes, but 5.4%. So for every taxable dollar that we change at that rate, we lose a dollar of revenue, right? It's a straight scale. It's easy to understand. And there is a tendency to apply that logic to personal property taxes and property taxes. But that's not how personal property and property taxes work.
No.
Those two taxes are a function of two different calculations. One, the assessment, which is what the county assessor does when they say, okay, your car is worth X.
Mm-hmm.
And then two, the actual levy that they multiply that assessment by to come up with a number of how much you owe.
That's right.
Now, levies, unlike income taxes and unlike sales taxes, which operate on a fixed number, property taxes and personal property taxes operate on a range. It's a range that's approved by the voters. So in any given year, if assessment values in a certain area drop for the number, the property values of houses and vehicles, the levies will go up to compensate for that loss. That way, the local areas don't see a loss in overall revenue.
Yeah.
Now, Hancock prevents cities and counties, the Hancock Amendment prevents cities and counties from actually getting more overall revenue in any given year that's more than the rate of inflation from the year prior. So in an environment where most areas of the state right now have property values that are climbing in order to make sure we don't violate the Hancock Amendment, counties actually have to drop their levies to make sure that the overall revenue doesn't increase more than inflation.
Well, you know, I mean, the thing about this is, you know, that's amazing to me is, you know, I'm not, you know, I don't do titles. I don't do conservative. I don't do progressive. You know, I'm just, you know, a person that deals with policy on a policy basis as it comes.
Right.
And when you look at the individuals who are actually paying the taxes, these are the constituents. These are the voters. And it seems like to me they are asking for relief.
That's correct.
You get me? And so if we are the people that represent them in government, hang on, even local government, we represent them in government and local government, we need to figure out a way to give that relief in certain instances. Now, I understand education is highly important to me. You know, I think that we, you know, we need to, you know, I don't think we're spending enough on education, period, in this body. And so when we're talking about the kids, that's why it looks like we're being what we call nickel and dime, because, you know, you're paying for education on the state level. We were funding it at a rate that will compensate. There's no need for us to go back on the local level and say, let me pass this for education and let me pass that for education. We need to figure out what the cost is to compensate for the different levels of learning that we have across the state. So when I look at, you know, what the personal property tax pays for, is not only is it education, there's a whole bunch of other stuff in there, but when you look at it, they're getting money for that same thing somewhere else. So it's like I'm paying taxes here to pay for it, I'm paying taxes on the state level to pay for it, and I'm paying taxes over here to pay for it. Because it's like a portion of it is here, a portion of it is here, a portion of it is here. Put it in one bucket. You know, that's all I'm saying. Put it in one bucket.
So let me, actually, that's good. I see the point you're making, because you're saying if you get rid of one and it just goes on to another tax, have we really gained anything? Here's what I would ask that you to consider. Personal property tax, one, is an incredibly regressive tax because the assessment rate is higher than even commercial property in the state of Missouri.
And why is that?
Because that's how it was originally designed. And because it was designed that way, because we put a 33% assessment on that, that means that if you own one or two vehicles, which most homes in this state do, you're paying the highest rate of property-related tax anywhere in our state code, which then means that folks who are on the lower end of the wealth scale, low-income homes, middle-income class homes, are paying an outsized portion of personal property tax if that switches over to regular property tax.
And so let's talk about this, though.
Okay.
So even if we, you know, when we're talking about personal property tax and where it goes, these are personal property tax on vehicles, and we're talking about where that money goes, none of it is going to the roads that the cars drive
That's right.
on it. None of it is going to environmental protection for
That's
in
right.
the city that the cars emissions. None of it is going to that.
That's
so
right.
it's like you're collecting personal property tax, and the things that I see that personal property tax are paying for, like I said, it has nothing to do with, you know, what the vehicle is, you know, supposed
the
to
roads.
Be doing. If they're tearing up the roads
yep.
or whatever,
right.
it's supposed to be a reinvestment back into the road. So I think it's skewed. So I like your amendment because it says that if I've owned my car for 5 years, I pay personal property tax and assessment for 5 years. Because to me, you never get through paying for your car. And I got a car that's a 2012, and I think I just paid $300 on that personal property
right.
tax. You get me?
I do.
And so it's a 2012. This is 2020. You never stop paying for the car. And
right.
at some point, you shouldn't have to pay anything on a car.
Just as a point to add to that, and I don't mean to interrupt you, just as a point to add to that, when you go buy a car, you pay the normal tax rate of whatever your area is, but which is at least 4.225% state sales tax. The equivalent at a 33% assessment rate of market value, you are effectively paying another 2.5% on the value of your car every single year at a 33% rate. So think about that. You pay 4.25% the moment you buy a brand new car, and then you got to pay again 2.5% every year into eternity.
Yeah. Well, I think that, you know, after 5 years, I think it's fair that it goes down to 1%. And I think that people that own cars, the individuals that pay these personal profits, they need some relief. And I think that's a good amendment. And I thank you for the inquiry.
Senator from the 20th has been seeking recognition.
Thank you, Mr. President, to speak on the amendment.
Proceed.
Thank you, Mr. President. I just want to walk through why I like this amendment. I don't think it goes as far as I would like for it to go. And I want to talk about why I think the personal property tax is probably the stupidest tax we have in the state of Missouri. One, it is a tax that is clearly double, if not triple, if not quadruple taxation. So we're basically telling citizens that you don't own anything that you purchase. You paid sales tax on the item. You paid sales tax when you bought it. Then you take it home. Guess what? You don't really own it. You continue to pay taxes on it. So this is what infuriates the taxpayers. This is what infuriates voters. Two, this is probably the most inefficient tax that we have in the state of Missouri. So let's think about the process. We send letters in the mail to voters. That costs money. We ask them to be honest and fill out a form that's very, in my opinion, intrusive into their lives, asking them to tell us all the computer equipment that they have in their commercial business, all the vehicles they own. We ask for how many chickens they have, how many cattle. This is all very intrusive, and if you fill it out wrong, you risk committing fraud to the state, which happens. In fact, one of the counties that I represent, the very assessor years ago made a mistake and lost their position because of the way they inappropriately filled out that form. So it's intrusive into the lives of our individuals. We ask people to fill out an extra form that's in addition to their other tax documents they have to file each year. Then we put them through this Rube Goldberg process to get their plates, right? So they have to fill out the form, then they have to pay the property tax when it's due, and then they have to get the receipt, and then when they want to get a title, they have to take it into the DMV and present it. And if by the way, you didn't bring in 2 years' worth of receipts, then you can only get 1 year worth of title or tag on your vehicle. This is a crazy process, and only an insane person would come up with such a difficult process to put taxpayers through in order to obtain taxes, okay? And finally, and I want to point out that the voters absolutely do support this. For those of you who may or may not know, there is a radio show host, Gary Nolan, here locally apparently, or in Columbia. This is his number one issue. He has been talking about this for years and years and years, about how bad of a tax this is, and he gains tremendous support from folks in the area, grassroots people who have initiated a true grassroots campaign to change this in the Constitution. But finally, I want to make this point. It is probably the most economically stupid tax we have, and this is why. Anyone who studies economics or studies businesses or evaluates businesses knows. So, for example, when Warren Buffett is looking at a business, whether or not he wants to invest in that business, he is determining, when he's evaluating the true value, they will always look at the capital expenditures. And then they will dive in deep to determine where are they spending the money. And because in economic theory, a business that is spending more money on consumables than on capital equipment. And so just to clarify what capital equipment is basically what we tax in personal property. It's equipment that you do not consume. In other words, it's equipment that might produce other capital goods, other items that would then be consumed. So if you're making an investment, you're looking for businesses that are spending more money on capital equipment. That's what you want. So as a state, we should be looking for people to buy more personal property, because that personal property is property that's not necessarily consumed. It will then generate other capital goods, other GDP. That's what we want. if you're going to have a tax, and debt taxes are basically a way of punishing, right? If you want to punish something, don't punish capital purchasing. You want to punish consumption. We want people to, if you want to accelerate the economy and grow the economy, don't punish the purchasing of equipment that will then produce more GDP. And that's those are the reasons why I think that we should ultimately, if we were going to really push Missouri in a good direction, accelerate the economy, we should look at this tax, which is burdensome. It is very inefficient. It's very intrusive to the taxpayers. As has been said before, it's very regressive to the poor. There's a number of reasons why I think this we should eliminate it. Thank you.
Further discussion. The senator from Dallas County was on her feet previously.
Thank you, Mr. President. May I inquire of the senator from the 23rd?
Senator from the 23rd, do you yield?
I do, Mr. President.
He does. Proceed.
Good afternoon, Senator. Have I ever inquired of you? I'm not sure.
You've inquired
of me.
Yes.
I'm not sure. I do have, and maybe forgive me if this has been brought up previously. I had to go to my office for just a few minutes. But so you've established it's basically we're going to shift from personal property to real property. Is that accurate, fairly accurate?
There is the capacity to do that, although in any area that is continuing to see assessments go up in regular property, it may not be required because, one, we're only taking a portion of personal property taxes, and, two, there may be enough flexibility in the normal levies that it...
So I guess what I'm getting at is if you, like, I'll just take me, for instance, and I'm interested on this topic. I'm not sure what I think at this point. I don't think I'm convinced. I'm not totally against the idea. Put it that way. Put me kind of in the middle at this point.
Okay.
What I do have a concern about is if we do shift some of the burden
right.
from real to real property, if we do shift it, do you think that's going to have any negative effects on home ownership, specifically for lower income people,
right.
also ones that rent?
Yep.
What I just kind of wanted to know your thoughts about that.
So my answer to that question would be no, I don't think it will. So let's take a fictional example of a family that fits into that low income realm. Let's say you have a family of four that has income of $30,000 a year, so a relatively modest amount. It's overwhelmingly likely, though, that even at that low income, they own one to two vehicles that they have to have in order to make it to work, in order to do what they need to do as far as being mobile in their communities. And the Census Bureau shows that most households in Missouri own at least one vehicle, and I think the average is 1.7 vehicles. So at that rate of $30,000, the personal property tax that you pay just on two vehicles could be upwards of $600 to $800, all in a lump sum on December 1st. Now, the average home value in the state of Missouri, the average market value for a home in this state is around $120,000. That's the average. Regular real estate taxes on a home that's valued at the median level in this household average in total for the whole year, less than $1,000. So let me play out this example. And if you're indulging me here because this is just an example.
No, I really want to know. I'm just trying to think through this process.
Let's say theoretically you have this family, they're paying $1,000 on their regular real estate taxes, and they're paying $700 on the two modest vehicles that they own. So if we got rid of all the personal property tax, we would be saving them that $700. Now, to compensate, I mentioned that personal property tax is about 15% of local revenues. So let's say, just theoretically, let's say the levies on regular real estate taxes went up by 15%, right, to accommodate that. So that means on $1,000, they would see, on $1,000 regular tax bill, they'd see an increase of about $150. But they saved almost $700. And the reason that is a pretty realistic example that we see play out across the state, precisely because the rate of assessment on personal property tax is so much higher than the assessment rate on regular property. The assessment rate on residential, yours and my house, is 19%, if I'm not mistaken. And I'm getting confirmation by the Senate of the 8th. So it's 19%. On your car, it's 33%. So you're naturally going to start have a lot. You have the system is skewed where... I'm sorry, I'm having technical difficulties. I've had a lot of trouble with this microphone today, Senator. We have a fixed
plan.
Somebody
sabotage you.
When the floor leader puts us on a break, there's going to be a repair crew here at my desk to fix this this microphone. I've been
Senator,
assured.
It might be muted. What do you think?
It might be removed. You never know, Senator.
I'm going to have a
the
microphone.
The floor leader's like, oh,
you're not
going
to have one.
That might be a good one. So because there's an imbalance because any given household is far more, I would use the word penalized when I talk about taxes. They're far more penalized for owning $100 in value of car than they are $100 in value of house. So your question has to do, well, I'm trying to think about the individuals that are on the lower end of the wealth spectrum. They may own a car or two, but they own a modest home. How's it going to affect them? Overwhelmingly, the net impact is going to be very positive for them. In fact, and I didn't get to this in any of my other inquiries today, we did a calculation on how valuable would your home have to be so that the increases that you saw as a result would offset everything that you gained if we got rid of personal property tax. You would have to own a home in order to lose on this deal. You would have to own a home that's valued at more than $1 million.
Well, that leaves me out. How about you?
So very few people, Senator. So now the question becomes, because I'm also making the case that overall this would essentially work itself out to a revenue. So somebody's got to pay for it, right? Well, the people that would automatically pay for it would be those that own a huge amount of real estate property, but maybe still only own two cars, which is a few people. But you could have a lot of property value in a single property, right, versus a single vehicle. So it's, and I think that explains why we have so many folks just in raw numbers that would like to see us move away from personal property tax, because there's so many people that would see a huge net benefit from it.
Okay, one more question. So you use the example you use, they were going to pay, I don't know, $600 or $800 in vehicles, but only $150 on the real estate. Is that kind of right?
So yeah, that would be the increase if you switched it all, yes.
Okay, so how does that not take money away from, like, our schools, for instance? If you're going from that to that, explain that to me.
So then your question basically is, if it's really revenue neutral for the counties, somebody's got to be paying, right?
Right.
So the people that are going to be paying, you're going to see a system in this scenario that we've drawn where your lowest income folks with it still own one to two vehicles in the state are seeing an enormous benefit. And if you, honestly, I'll be honest, if you are in a $10 million home, you're probably going to see the increase from real estate taxes if you only own two vehicles that's no longer falling on those low-income households. Now, if you look around the country, that type of system has been overwhelmingly adopted by virtually every state in the country. Now, my preference, just to be fair, my preference would be to not only get rid of personal property tax, but then to have an additional mechanism to prevent it from going from anywhere else. And I think that conversation is a little bit different, if you know what I'm saying.
I think that would be very different.
It's a little bit different. And unfortunately, in that scenario, it's such a big jump. I think what you would do in that case is you would have to phase out the personal property tax. If you phase out the personal property, so let's take if personal property taxes are 15% of the revenues, let's say I'm just making up numbers. Let's say we phase it out over 10 years. Okay, so that means that 1.5% of personal property tax goes away per year, right? So if that's the case, then that 1.5% can easily be absorbed by real estate taxes, actually still within the normal level that real estate taxes were increasing anyway.
So would that be a better way to do this, do you think, instead of just one big whack?
So let's bring the conversation back to where we are right now. So my amendment is an attempt by me to draw a compromise between the two bills that were voted out of the Ways and Means Committee. My original bill, which would have been an SJR to completely eliminate personal property tax from the Constitution, and a similar amendment or bill from the former senator from the 7th that would just focus that restriction to vehicles over 10 years of age. Because that was the tone of the conversation that had already made it through the process, and I know we're trying to be very careful about that at this point in the session, I'm trying to navigate with my amendment something in between. And so what I came up with as a something in between is that why don't we offer some relief to individuals who have a vehicle that's over 5 years of age. That will move the state in the direction of moving away from personal property tax. It will overwhelmingly show up as a huge net positive for...
Three senators standing. Senator for Butler, what reason do you rise?
Would you please put that bill on the informal calendar, please?
That bill shall be placed on the informal calendar. Senator from Boone.
Thank you, Mr. President. Would you inquire from the Secretary if there are messages from the House? If so, I ask that they be read.
There are messages from the House. Madam Secretary, please read those messages.
Mr. President, I'm instructed by the House of Representatives to inform the Senate that the House refuses to adopt Senate Committee Substitute for House Substitute for House Committee Substitute for House Bill 2002 as amended, and requests the Senate to recede from its position and, failing to do so, grant the House a conference thereon. Also, Mr. President, I'm instructed by the House of Representatives to inform the Senate that the House refuses to adopt Senate Committee Substitute for House Substitute for House Committee Substitute for House Bill 2003, and requests the Senate to recede from its position and, failing to do so, grant the House a conference thereon. Also, Mr. President, I'm instructed by the House of Representatives to inform the Senate that the House refuses to adopt Senate Committee Substitute for House Substitute for House Committee Substitute for House Bill 2004 as amended, and requests the Senate to recede from its position and, failing to do so, grant the House a conference thereon. Also, Mr. President, I am instructed by the House of Representatives to inform the Senate that the House refuses to adopt Senate Committee Substitute for House Substitute for House Committee Substitute for House Bill 2005, and requests the Senate to recede from its position and, failing to do so, grant the House a conference thereon. Also, Mr. President, I am instructed by the House of Representatives to inform the Senate that the House refuses to adopt Senate Substitute for Senate Committee Substitute for House Substitute for House Committee Substitute for House Bill 2006, and requests the Senate to recede from its position and, failing to do so, grant the House a conference thereon. Also, Mr. President, I'm instructed by the House of Representatives to inform the Senate that the House refuses to adopt Senate Committee Substitute for House Substitute for House Committee Substitute for House Bill 2007, and requests the Senate to recede from its position and, failing to do so, grant the House a conference thereon. Also, Mr. President, I'm instructed by the House of Representatives to inform the Senate that the House refuses to adopt Senate Committee Substitute for House Substitute for House Committee Substitute for House Bill 2008 as amended, and requests the Senate to recede from its position and, failing to do so, grant the House a conference thereon. Also, Mr. President, I'm instructed by the House of Representatives to inform the Senate that the House refuses to adopt Senate Committee Substitute for House Substitute for House Committee Substitute for House Bill 2009 and request the Senate to recede from its position and, failing to do so, grant the House a conference thereon. Also, Mr. President, I am instructed by the House of Representatives to inform the Senate that the House refuses to adopt Senate Committee Substitute for House Substitute for House Committee Substitute for House Bill 2010 as amended and request the Senate to recede from its position and, failing to do so, grant the House a conference thereon. Also, Mr. President, I am instructed by the House of Representatives to inform the Senate that the House refuses to adopt Senate Committee Substitute for House Substitute for House Committee Substitute for House Bill 2011 as amended and request the Senate to recede from its position and, failing to do so, grant the House a conference thereon. Also, Mr. President, I'm instructed by the House of Representatives to inform the Senate that the House refuses to adopt Senate Committee Substitute for House Substitute for House Committee Substitute for House Bill 2012 and request the Senate to recede from its position and, failing to do so, grant the House a conference thereon. Also, Mr. President, I am instructed by the House of Representatives to inform the Senate that the House refuses to adopt Senate Committee Substitute for House Committee Substitute for House Bill 2013 and request the Senate to recede from its position and, failing to do so, grant the House a conference thereon. Also, Mr. President, I am instructed by the House of Representatives to inform the Senate that the House refuses to adopt Senate Substitute Number 2 for Senate Committee Substitute for House Bill 1450, House Bill 1296, House Committee Substitute for House Bill 1331, and House Committee Substitute for House Bill 1898 as amended, and request the Senate to recede from its position and, failing to do so, grant the House a conference thereon. Respectfully submitted, Dana Rada Miller, Chief Clerk.
Senator from Franklin.
Mr. President, if there are conferees at the desk, I would ask that be read.
There are conferees at the desk, Madam Secretary. Please read the conferees.
Conference Committee Appointments on House Bill 1768 with Senate Substitute for Senate Committee Substitute as amended. Senators Hageman, Sater, Crawford, Rizzo, Arthur.
Senator from Boone.
Thank you, Mr. President. Would you recognize the Senator from Platt for a privilege motion on House Bill 1450?
Senator from Platt County.
Thank you, Mr. President. I have a privilege motion.
State your motion.
Mr. President, I move that the Senate refuse to recede on Senate Substitute Number 2 for Senate Committee Substitute for House Bill 1450 et al. And grant a conference thereon.
You've heard the motion from the Senator of Platt County. Does any senator desire to be heard on that motion? Hearing none, Senator, you're recognized to close.
President, I renew my motion.
Senator from Platt renews his motion that the Senate refuse to concede on Senate Substitute for Senate Committee Substitute for House Bill Number 1450 et al. And grant a conference thereon. All those in favor of that motion signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, nay. The ayes appear to have it. The ayes do have it. You have passed the motion. Senator from Boone.
Thank you, Mr. President. Without objection, the Senate will go to the order of business of announcements.
Hearing no objection, the order of business will be announcements. Announcements. Senator from Boone.
Thank you, Mr. President. No further business coming before the body. I move that the Senate stand in recess until 2:45 p.m. this day.
You've heard the motion from the Senator of Boone County. All those in favor of that motion signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, nay. The ayes appear to have it. The ayes do have it. The Senate shall stand in recess until 2:45 p.m. this day.